There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, with rumors circulating that Urban Meyer is set to take a job at Fox Sports, everyone from prominent media members to the Jacksonville Jaguars owner is talking about Meyer's short and disastrous time in the NFL. SI staffer Connor Orr is here to review the long list of problems that led to Meyer being fired after just 13 games. And later, before Memphis Grizzlies point guard Ja Morant suffered a knee injury in the second round against the Warriors, he was playing some of the best basketball of anyone in the playoffs, continuing on his incredible regular season. SI staffer Mike Pina joins us to discuss Ja making the leap to superstardom. But first, the wild true story of how a small rugby team in Italy took on the mafia. It's Wednesday, May 11th. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly.
The name Briganti, it comes from the word brigand, which is someone who's a rebel or a pirate or someone rallying against the status quo or the authorities at the time. And actually, Briganti also comes from this Calabrian folk song called Briganti Se Mori, or roughly to die a brigand. And there's a key line from that song, and it goes, "The land is ours and nobody can touch it. Let's make our enemies tremble." There's been equipment stolen. Someone fired a bullet into the door of the clubhouse. It's just an ongoing fight against organized crime in Labrino, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. The players feel so strongly about their club these days that they actually put in night shifts to guard the Santiadoro every night. Can you imagine Leo Messi or Neymar putting in night shifts to guard the Parc des Princes in Paris?
This is Sean Williams. He traveled to the foot of Mount Etna to write a story for Sports Illustrated about a rugby club standing up to the mafia. From here on out, you'll hear his voice and some of the people he met through a translator.
Labrino is a sprawling suburb of Catania, which is the second largest city on the Italian island of Sicily. It was built in the late 60s and 70s as a modern utopia, feeding the city with workers. As it turned out, the money dried up. The city didn't build the shops and the swimming pools and the gyms and the facilities that the people had been promised. And rather than be a utopia, it kind of ended up as a ruined, dystopian, crumbling collection of tower blocks. One of the most interesting guys I met while I was in Catania was a player for the first men's team called Alessio Panebianco.
Io lo librino, cioè io amore e odio.
So my relationship with Librino, it's love and hate at the same time. Hate because it's not a good place where you can grow up. But also I love it because it's the place where I grew up. It's my childhood.
There wasn't a single high school. Opportunities were scarce. And in scenarios like this, the mafia can easily take hold. Just down the road is the centre of Catania. That's like an ancient city, cobblestone streets, beautiful churches, all the things you might think about when you think of Sicily, Italy, or even the Godfather, which of course was set on the island and is how most people think Italian mafia, mafiosi, look like. Although the people who run Librino, they're not wearing pinstripes and they don't have Tommy guns in violin cases. This is a very, very different type of organised crime. These were tracksuit-wearing, drug-smuggling thugs who murdered thousands in a series of wars and bombing campaigns across the era. Finally, in 1986, Sicilian authorities cracked down and conducted the world's largest trial at a special-made bunker inside of a Palermo prison. By 1992, prosecutors had convicted 338 of the so-called Maxi Trial's 475 defendants. Later that year, mob assassins murdered those prosecutors, shocking Sicilians. But the deaths were the last convulsions of an underworld on its knees. In the following years, the island's mafia grew more diffuse, with a growing income divide. Wealthier mobsters moved into white-collar crimes. Small-time crooks battled for scraps in poor local markets such as Librino, peddling stolen goods and drugs through kids who stood to face only reduced juvenile prison terms.
This poor condition, actually it's gold for the mafia, yeah. Because maybe they have cash money to support the family.
Enter Briganti di Librino, a rugby club. It started at a local social club when one of the leaders, Piero Mancuso, brought in a rugby ball and started tossing it around between the members. The club's philosophy was staunchly left-wing, anti-fascist, anti-racist, welcoming everyone into the fold in a city which was pretty right-wing at the time. They wanted to give everyone a good start, basically, keep kids away from crime. Rugby isn't very popular in southern Italy or Sicily at all. Some people play it in the north, but really it's soccer or calcio in the local language, which is the preeminent sport. But soccer has a long and sordid history with the mafia. Members of Naples' Camorra crime syndicate plied Diego Maradona with drugs and sex workers in the 1980s. There's so much that is intertwined in Italian sport with organised crime. There are dozens of clubs where there have been mafiosi running the place. Mancuso was also wary of soccer's on-field culture, which rewards flops and theatricality, and which centres on an obsession with individual talent. In contrast, no ball reaches the opposing try line without everybody's involvement. Soccer is balletic. Rugby is trench warfare.
Hai bisogno di una squadra che lavora insieme, no? Anche
in rugby, you need to look at what you have around you, what there is in the playground. It's not enough to have in your team like a very good player. You have also to work with the others.
If you fall, says Gloria Mertoli, the captain of Briganti's senior women's team. Teammates will help you back up.
This is like life, because this will help you always to live, standing up again after you fell. So you fall and then you stand up and you continue.
The San Teodoro is Briganti's beloved ground, but they actually started there as squatters. It was built in 1997 to house the World University Games, but no one ever even used it and it just laid there, growing moss and going derelict. But Mancuso was pretty sure that he wanted this to be his home turf. So from when the club was first formed in 2006, all the way up to 2012, the club was essentially squatters, just being there illegally, playing, training without the consent of the authorities or the police or anyone, much less the mafia. On April 25th, 2012, which was uncoincidentally 32 years to the day after Italy was liberated from fascism, Mancuso moved everybody into the San Teodoro and declared it to be their official home, paperwork be damned. Giuseppe Cunzolo was exactly the kind of kid the club was aiming at. He was a 13-year-old from Librino, and he was kind of getting wound up in some of the darker sides of the neighbourhood's activities. In 2012, just after the club rocked up at the San Teodoro, he was knocked off his moped and killed. No one truly knows what happens to him, but pretty much everyone in the club suspects it was to do with his activities in the mafia. To honour Giuseppe, Briganti named their clubhouse after him. It became kind of a focal point, a rallying point for the club to kind of cement their vision to try and buck the trend of the mafia and the organised crime that was taking over Librino at the time. But the Giuseppe Cunzolo clubhouse, that's just one small part of the whole San Teodoro complex. You've got the field and you've got the playing areas, of course, but you've also got these giant hangars, like air hangars. One of them's got a gym in it, another one's got a cafe, there's a bar, there's a learning area, there's a library for kids. It's really like a holistic neighborhood spot that all the kids can come to. But above all, they can be safe and they have someone to look out for them and look after them. Over the coming years, the club grew and grew, and hundreds of young kids from the local neighborhood were getting involved and becoming brigands against organized crime. But that wasn't the end of the club's war against the mafia. At midnight, on January 11th, 2018, a blaze broke out in the Giuseppe Cunzolo clubhouse, destroying almost everything inside. Authorities never officially connected the fire to the Cosa Nostra, who rely heavily on arson as an intimidation tactic. But to Briganti, it was a clear message from the mob. We run Librino.
Brucia, in tutti sensi.
They want to show that power when they burn down here. They wanted to say, we are here, this is us. They know that we take from the streets the guys that could be their workers.
The following morning, everyone showed up to train, players, staff, and their families. And the place was a wreck. But rather than sit around or feel sorry for themselves, Briganti did, I guess, what Briganti do best, and that's just carry on playing.
So we must react. The day after the fire, we did the after schools on the stairs, and they did the trainings.
They ran drills. They just kind of carried on through, which is what they've done ever since they were first founded. There was a huge response from outside the club in the rugby world. Clubs from Ireland and Australia and New Zealand and England and France, they all came together, stumping up the cash and the gear to build Briganti back up from the ashes. There's been equipment stolen. Someone fired a bullet into the door of the clubhouse. In 2021, someone came over to the Briganti clubhouse and they torched the club bus that was sitting behind the place at the time. And the club have still kept the burnt out tyre marks from that incident, so that everyone can see just what it means to be a brigand. It's just an ongoing fight against organised crime in Librino, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. The players feel so strongly about their club these days that they actually put in night shifts to guard the San Teodoro every night. So they will go in groups of three or four at a time, and they'll stay there all the way through the night, guarding the doors, making sure no one's coming in to torch the place or to threaten them or to steal equipment or even steal the AstroTurf that they've built their new field out of, which actually happened pretty recently. These young guys are Briganti through and through. They've been there for years. They've seen the best of it, the worst of it, and they're determined to kind of push it to the next level. And that's not just behind the scenes or as a social outreach program. They actually want to be good on the field. They're trying to move up the leagues. They want to be a part of the higher, even semi-pro or professional leagues in Italy. They've certainly got the whole of the local neighborhood behind them. So the sky's the limit.
qualcuno che cercherà di
We resisted and we continue, but nothing is eternal, so we don't know, maybe something will put us in the situation that we cannot continue, but for now we are winning.
This club means so, so much more to its players and their family and the whole community than just a bunch of guys turning up on a Saturday or a Sunday to play rugby. Brigante is part of Lobrino now. It's just become such a lifeline for kids who have grown up in poor or even violent families associated with organised crime. I mean, it's impossible to get away from the sort of crime that's on the streets in this area. There's people dealing drugs everywhere. Violent clashes between rival gangs pretty much every other day. And Brigante is a safe haven. More than one player described it to me as their happy place. One of the most interesting guys I met while I was in Catania was one of the first men's team players called Alessio Panabianco. He's this squat, really muscular, really cool, talented player, but he also has this really piercing stare and a way of speaking really passionately about the club. And it's not surprising given that he's grown up just a couple blocks away from the San Teodoro.
Non lo so, gli vuoi dire questa parte andando?
I wasn't born here, but I grew up here and I started playing rugby at the age of 12. I didn't know about rugby before I started with the Brigante.
And he feels like such a huge responsibility. He's one of these young generation and he wants to teach the younger kids. He takes training there all the time. I mean, there literally isn't a day where this guy isn't down at the club, either teaching young people how to play rugby or hanging out at the library, or just like messing about with his friends. Here's one thing he told me.
Of course, I can say also my parents have a part, but the 80% of what I am today is the Brigante. I imagine my life very dark, without light. I Brigante are the light.
Sean Williams wrote the story, The Land is Ours and Nobody Can Touch It, which appears in the magazine and on SI.com. You can also listen to him on the Underworld podcast. We'll have a link in our show notes. After a break, we take a look back at Urban Meyer's no good, very bad time as head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey, all. Just a quick heads up. As we were finishing this segment, news broke that former Jaguars kicker Josh Lambeau is suing the team over Urban Meyer allegedly kicking him. Now, we discussed that incident in this piece, but it's yet another reminder that Meyer's tenure with Jacksonville was an utter debacle. And with that update, here's the segment.
It's my privilege to introduce the new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Urban Meyer.
Well, thanks, Shad. I would first like to thank Shad Khan for this opportunity to lead the organization into 2021, 2021, and beyond.
Breaking news, actually happened overnight. Urban Meyer is now officially Urban fired.
The year that was for Urban Meyer in the NFL, there ain't much good, man.
No.
There is a lot of bad.
Liar, fraud, you name it, because that's who Urban Meyer is.
Filled with several controversies since his hiring in January, including the latest report I just mentioned, physically kicking a player. His 13 games are the fewest by a non-interim head coach in Jaguars history.
Let's just say that when the Jacksonville Jaguars bet on Urban Meyer as their head coach, it didn't exactly pay off. Meyer had one of the worst and most maligned runs of any head coach in NFL history. And now, with rumors circulating that he'll return to the broadcast booth, everyone from the media to the Jaguars owner has lately talked about Meyer's disastrous time with the Jags, and in pretty harsh and candid terms. To review all of that, we brought in one of our favorite SI staffers and recurring guests from the MMQB podcast. Connor Orr, welcome back to Sports Illustrated Weekly.
I'm getting comfortable in this chair now. I like coming on SI Weekly. This is good.
So we're going to give you a producer credit. You're here so much.
Yes.
Constantly on Sports Illustrated Weekly. We love to have you here. And I'm excited to talk to you about this specific topic because you really shine in pointing out where everybody else screws up. And man, did Urban Meyer screw up. Reports are swirling that the former Jaguars head coach will be taking a job at Fox Sports to talk college football, which, you know, sure, I guess. But he was fired unceremoniously as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. There was a long list of misdeeds while he was in Jacksonville, which we're going to get into. But Connor, as our resident NFL historian, where does this rank among the worst flameouts in league history?
Oh, well, thank you for the introduction. And I will just add that I screw up all the time too. So if anyone ever wants to ask me about those, I'm more than happy to be fair and equitable in that. But where does this rank among the worst coaching hires of all time? I mean, gosh, I would say given the stakes, right? Because you're drafting Trevor Lawrence and he is a generational quarterback prospect who we've talked about for like 3 years coming out into the NFL. You, as Shad Khan, staked your reputation on this. You got rid of a coaching staff and a GM that had taken Blake Bortles to the AFC Championship game.
Wow,
not
forgot
too
about
long
that.
Ago. I mean, it has to be among the worst, if not the worst.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the worst. And not just because of all the things that went wrong, but also because of the residual effect and obvious acrimony that remains. Jags owner Shad Khan was recently asked about why he dismissed Meyer. And he said it wasn't about wins and losses. He noted that Doug Marrone and Gus Bradley were also losers. And so Marrone and Bradley out there minding their own business and just catching strays in this one. But Khan said, quote, "When you lose the respect, the trust, and an issue of truthfulness, how can you possibly work with somebody like that? It's not possible." Connor, that's not just an indictment of Meyer, the coach. That's an indictment of Meyer, the man.
Yeah, and Shad Khan is interesting to me, right? I think he's among the better owners in the NFL. And everyone's always like, "You're out of your mind. It's crazy." I don't think so, because he holds on to coaches. Like, he gives people a long runway. Like, he gives them time, and it's not for lack of concern or lack of caring. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, I believe in this person. And he believed in Gus Bradley. He loved Gus Bradley. And so I think he's one of those guys that's not necessarily like Jerry Jones, where it's like, I'm a handshake kind of guy, but it's like, yeah, if you cross Shad Khan in a way and come across as visibly either insubordinate or untrustworthy, I think he has no choice but to let you go. And it's a stunning admission from an owner, not certain owners, but I think him in particular, it's a very stunning admission.
It is a stunning admission, and especially in retrospect, I think we forget because obviously everything went so terribly awry. But at the beginning, there were really high hopes
for Meyer in Jacksonville, especially because, as you mentioned, Trevor Lawrence is their young quarterback. And there was all this hype about, oh, Urban Meyer working with Trevor Lawrence, won't that be a perfect marriage? I mean, I think we forget about the way that it was billed in the run-up.
Jacksonville just got the world's smartest stockbroker. They're an $8 stock. The minute they draft Trevor Lawrence, they're a $28 stock. And Urban Meyer, with that cap space, few free agents, they're a $48 stock.
I feel like I was fairly critical from the beginning. I think my column on draft night when they drafted Trevor Lawrence was, are we sure about this? You can still get out of it if you want to. But, you know, I think my antenna started to raise up when you looked at the staff, because that's always a big thing when college coaches come to the NFL. He obviously had the controversy with the strength and conditioning coach from Iowa, but generally speaking, like, you're taking guys who probably aren't at the top of a lot of people's coordinator lists. Like, there wasn't a lot of people like beating down the door there to work with him. And I think that his reputation preceded him, because it's like two sides of the inkblot test. How are you looking at it? Urban Meyer got really successful for being demanding and holding people accountable, or Urban Meyer got really successful by scaring the bejesus out of all of his assistant coaches and screaming at them all the time.
And kids, right?
And children, yeah. And like 18-year-olds. We walk this fine line with all great coaches. We do. To some degree. Maybe not necessarily as far as Urban Meyer, but I think his reputation in that regard preceded him. And that's when my antenna went up. It's like, I don't know.
I mean, it's such a cliche to say, you know, college coaches failing in the NFL, but this is such an egregious example of it. I want to walk through what went wrong for Meyer in Jacksonville. And the short answer there is obviously everything, but the long answer requires some review. So I'll rattle off some of these things, and after each one, you can just respond. All right, he pushed for live contact drills right away.
So I wrote this a couple months ago. Him and Joe Judge are the last faux tough guy head coaches that will ever exist in the NFL. It's done. It's absolutely done. Like, in the league before, we've always had that flip and that flop, right? The joke is always, you put the ping pong table in the locker room, then you pull it out, then you put it in, you know. Urban Meyer was that, you know, let's pull the ping pong table out, let's beat the crap out of each other. And it was just such a dated philosophy. And I just think nobody responds to that anymore, because players are so aware of all the dangers that they're putting their body through, that they're like, why am I going to multiply this in a useless practice that you're not even running correctly anyway?
Yeah, nobody's running wind sprints after practice anymore. All right, here's another one for you. He held a winner-loser drill that led to a broken finger for DJ Chark.
It's just like, I don't know. I mean, I would guess, I'm 33, right? So I would guess my generation is probably the last that did those torturous games when we like played football when we grew up, right? Bull in the ring or the Oklahoma drill or all that stuff that you were just like scared the bejesus out of you as a 9-year-old that you had to do in youth football. And Urban Meyer's doing it with
still doing
30-year-old guys.
With these 30-year-old guys, he forbade players from speaking to opponents, and he berated a player so harshly he cried.
It's just ridiculous. Like, when was the last time, honestly, that you think, maybe Pittsburgh and Cincinnati in the NFL, but there was a rivalry where like you just hated those guys because of the uniform? That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And to come in and assume, like in college, this is a typical college coach mistake, pitfall, right? You're able to convince these children that they should hate the guys in the other uniform. There's some sort of like, you know, provincial thing going on there, or they said this about you or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But in the NFL, it's like, yeah, I hang out with all those guys. I train with all those guys.
Right. Yeah. I mean, professionalism, you can be professional and still compete. Here's my favorite one, although probably wasn't for the player. He kicked the kicker, Josh Lambeau. And not only did he kick the kicker, Josh Lambeau, he said he didn't. And then Lambeau said, yeah, he did.
He comes up to me and he says, hey, dip, another word, make your effing kicks. And then proceeds to kick me right in the leg, right in the hamstring.
This one always, like, it was my favorite part of the story. And again, it's not for Josh, obviously.
Yeah.
If you can imagine, Josh is an NFL veteran, right? And
an adult.
An adult, yeah. And you and I, so you and I are, you know, we've been in this business for enough time that I feel like we could stand on our own 2 feet and we can say to someone like, hey, don't talk to me that way. And Josh Lambeau is that in the NFL. He was a long-term kicker. And to imagine a grown man coming up to you who's never coached in the NFL before and then kicked him. And Josh said, hard enough where it bothered me, right? Like, it wasn't like a playful kick. Like, it was, the report insinuated that there was at least some kind of a windup, you know?
Yeah.
And he kicked him hard enough to bother him. Like, I make an Urban Meyer kicking joke on the MMQB podcast at least once a week and have for months because it's just so unbelievably stunning to me and just shows the most insane lack of awareness.
Yet another reason to listen to the MMQB podcast with Connor Orr and Gary Grambling. Some more serious stuff here. I mean, that's some of the lighter, dumber, I can't believe he would go that route stuff. Then there's some stuff here where you go, okay, this is beyond the pale, much more serious. Like when he said the players couldn't make $15 an hour outside of the NFL, that has some obvious, really gross, ugly, racist undertones. And forget about the undertones. There were some overtones where he said that John Brown ran a wrong route in practice. And he said, hey, Trevor, talking about Trevor Lawrence, you've got to slow it down for him. These boys from the South, their transcripts ain't right. I mean, that's just disgusting commentary from a head coach, from anybody.
Yeah. And what's really interesting to me is this is happening on the heels of the most significant social justice movement in sports in a long time, like in decades, maybe since, you know, the raising of the fist in the Olympics. And there were so many coaches in the NFL who couldn't care less, but got on board because they understood what it meant to their players. And so for Urban to come from a college environment where I felt like that was accepted a lot sooner than it was in the NFL. And then to not get that, A, as just a basic human being, you're not supposed to talk to people that way. But B, as a leader of men, like, you can't understand how that's going to play in the locker room. It's complete ignorance in a way that, like, it's just surprising. Like, you have that low of a sense of self-awareness.
Wholly indefensible, really gross conduct by him. You had mentioned the coaching staff previously. He was not at all easy on them, constantly threatened to fire them, belittled the staff in front of players, called them losers, and identified himself as a winner, which LOL, and demanded that they show their resumes and what they've done, which also super LOL. I mean, can you imagine being in a meeting and he's demanding, like, what have you ever done? Show me your resume. You hired me, guy.
There were like a decent handful of guys who had Super Bowl rings in that room, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I know Daryl Bevel would have had one, the offensive coordinator. There was a lot of people in there that had won a lot of games in the NFL, which was funny to me. But I think this is where it resonates with me. I talk to a lot of coaches, especially on the younger end of the spectrum, and I hear a lot about what they gave up to get to this place. And this is true about players too, but coaches generally are, you know, my age and beyond, young families, right? You're moving across the country constantly. One coach told me recently, I walked out the door and my daughter was 3 and I walked back in and she was 16, you know, and that's my life. And so to be able to have that effort that you put into something so brazenly insulted, like, that's the part of it. Like, we'll say this word over and over again, right? It's awareness. It's thinking of, wow, how is that going to come off if I say to somebody who literally gave their life and all the good things in it to this sport to insult them that way? It's crazy.
I'm glad that you mentioned and used the word awareness because clearly he didn't have much of it. He didn't seem to know the NFL system or the big players there at one point. He didn't know Aaron Donald's name, which was kind of wild. And then awareness off the field as well. He was caught on camera grinding with a young woman at a bar. And shortly after, there were photos of his wife at home with the children at the same time. So I guess you take all of this together, right? And my question is, how did he even last as long as he did?
Yeah, that again is like, Shad wants to believe in people. He is one of those owners that, like, really, you know, when you tell me you're going to do something, that represents like a personal thing between us. And I think Urban is really good at the setup, right? He's good at the meeting, the initial meeting, saying, I'm going to do all this stuff and we're going to change the way we think about everything and act and do and blah, 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 blah. And we can all say this in 2020 hindsight. I don't know what it would have been like in a hiring position to sit there and be like, huh. Obviously, he had that background at Ohio State that would have raised red flags for all of us. I mean, some of the stuff that he did holding on to the coaches that he held on to and everything. But when you're an owner that's so desperate to get somewhere other than where you are, you're in a vulnerable position. And I think he's kind of good at capitalizing on that.
With Fox Sports deciding to flirt with him again. All of this stuff from his past is being brought up, right? We're talking about it. People are mentioning what happened at Ohio State. People are running through all the things that went wrong in Jacksonville. Your former NFL Network colleague, Rich Eisen, is having an absolute field day with this, dunking on Urban Meyer.
The idea of Urban Meyer being, as I said here, the biggest coaching flop in the history of the NFL. And there's been a lot of them. But to find out that just how bad we thought it was wasn't as bad as it really was is beyond the pale, but maybe not shocking. Just real quick, Doug Peterson, things that he will not do is threaten to fire his coaches after calling them losers. We knew about that already. He will not make a player cry because he has so criticized. If I'm Shad Khan, I see this article, I'm thinking of suing. What a fraud.
My question is, should he be back? I mean, should he be on Fox Sports or should he just like go off into the wilderness, never to be heard from again?
I mean, if there's any network that would, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But, you know, no, I obviously you're right. You know, but I would wonder from a strategic standpoint, if you're Fox, one of two things. Do you think that anything he's going to say is going to be taken seriously, right? Because I think every Saturday, what he'll do is he'll be like, oh, well, what the coach should have done is this. And we're going to be able to almost, you know, not to draw the comparison, but like our former president, you know, there was always an example of him doing the exact opposite of that. Like, we need to do this. And he would do that. And someone would pull up the tweet, you know, and with Urban Meyer, it's like, oh, the coach has got to have integrity. And then someone would be like, well, you know,
yeah,
there's so many things that he won't be able to say on the air. But I also wonder, do you not care? And is that part of the draw that you know that people are going to watch just to see what he does? I don't know. I'm not in high-ranking TV meetings, so I don't know how any of that stuff works. But
no, if I were an executive, I would not. However, as a content consumer and a content producer, great for us. Can't wait to watch that train wreck. And also for the Jaguars, congratulations to them being in a better spot. They have Doug Peterson now. Go Birds. So it worked out just fine. Read him on SI.com. Listen to him on the MMQB podcast. He would never kick a kicker. Connor Orr, thanks for this.
Thank you.
After a break, we discuss the young human highlight reel, Ja Morant, and his rise to superstar.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Michael Pina, Welcome to Sports Illustrated Weekly, finally.
This is one of the greatest days of my life, John. Thank you so much for having me.
We have you on to talk about Ja Morant making the leap to superstardom, and I still want to have that conversation, but you and I offline have talked about how Ja's like never afraid of the moment, but there was one moment from late in game three that he'd probably like to forget.
So Ja Morant, well, his right knee bottom could have happened right here on this play. You see Jordan Poole go grab it, grab the knee.
After that game, he was injured, and Ja tweeted about the code and then deleted it. And Grizz head coach Taylor Jenkins mentioned the code, and Jaren Jackson Jr. mentioned the code, and there's a lot of talk about the code. So explain to everybody what happened, what the code is.
So the code is something that Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr referenced after game two when Dylan Brooks swung his arm and connected with Gary Payton II's head.
Right down the middle, he's fouled hard. And Payton's in pain.
Gary Payton II was in midair. He came crashing to the ground. He fractured his elbow. He is out for a few weeks at least. He's definitely out for the rest of this series. And a lot of players on Golden State's side thought that that was a dirty play. Steve Kerr called it dirty.
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was dirty. Playoff basketball is going to, it's supposed to be physical, but there's a code in this league. You never put a guy's season / career in jeopardy. He broke the code. Dylan Brooks broke the code.
The Memphis Grizzlies and Dylan Brooks responded by essentially saying that it's the playoffs. Things happen when you are going 100 miles an hour and that nothing was intentional. Ja Morant, at the end of game three, Ja Morant has been dealing with right knee soreness for the entirety of the postseason. He missed a couple weeks of action at the end of the regular season with knee soreness. And there was one play at the end of game three when Golden State Warriors guard Jordan Poole looked like he was reaching for the ball, and he inadvertently grabbed Ja's knee and tweaked it a little bit. And after the game, as you said, Ja tweeted a clip of the play and referenced Steve Kerr's talk about the code. The way that I perceived this was the Memphis Grizzlies are a team that, you know, they stand up for one another. And so this was less Ja's way of calling out Jordan Poole. I don't think that was his intention to say that Jordan Poole is dirty, but more to say, hey, this is the playoffs, things happen, and it wasn't cool that you said what you said about my teammate, my brother, Dylan Brooks. So that was how I saw that.
Yeah, a whole lot of conversation about dirty plays and the code going on right now, including in our colleague Chris Herring's newsletter about the NBA, which I highly recommend everybody subscribe to. This instance and application of the code feels off because when I watched that play, especially in real time, it didn't feel like a dirty play to me from Jordan Poole. It felt like he was going for the ball, kind of hit his knee. We don't even know if that's the moment when Ja hurt his knee.
Right.
So it felt like they were crying a little bit too much wolf on this particular play.
I think if you were to give Ja truth serum, I don't think any of them actually are casting malicious aspersions on Jordan Poole, on the Golden State Warriors for retaliation or anything like that. I honestly think that they took offense to the way Steve Kerr characterized the play with Dylan Brooks.
Taking somebody out in midair and clubbing him across the head.
It was a dangerous play, objectively. There's a lot of physicality. Things happen at extremely fast speeds. I hope that everyone can move on from the dirty play talk because it's not cool.
All right, so as we record this prior to game five, we don't know if Ja will be available. Even if he does come back, though, Mike, the Grizzlies are down 3-1. Do you give Memphis any chance, even with Ja?
You know, down 3-1 against Steph Curry, against Draymond Green, against the closest thing that we had to a dynasty in recent NBA history, that's going to be pretty difficult. Win three games in a row. That technically has been done before by someone named LeBron James. So it is possible. And the Memphis Grizzlies only lost by 3 points in San Francisco Monday night.
A rally by the Warriors here in game four.
Roy on the floor, successful three-point field goal.
They take a 3-1 series lead and on the precipice of advancing to the Western Conference Finals.
You add Ja Morant to the mix, I'm not going to bet my life on a Memphis Grizzlies comeback, but I will say that this team is super unique, super athletic, believes in itself in a way that not every team down 3-1 would. I will not say that the series is 100% over, and Ja Morant is a very special talent. He has a self-awareness that he mixes with a confidence that borders on cocky and could be described as brash, but he just believes he's always the best player on the floor. And if any superstar in the league could lead their team back right now from a deficit like that, I think he's up there in that conversation.
Yeah, whether or not the Grizzlies can actually claw their way back into the series, I'm with you. Ja is a special player, and we all hope that he's okay because we want to see him back on the floor again because he's been such a delight to watch.
Absolutely.
So how would you describe Ja Morant's style of play?
It is captivating.
Morant blows by Primo. Attack!
It is compelling.
Avery Bradley with the deflection against Bang! Oh, Morant! What an incredible block! Blocks it with two hands.
It is must-see television.
Adams going long. Morant!
He has incredible bounce. He just had one of the greatest dunks of his entire career in game 5 of the first round over poor Malik Beasley.
Winner takes a 3-2 lead in this opening round series. Morant, oh! A jawbreaker!
He's a joy. He's a pure joy to watch play basketball.
The leap that he's taken from last season to this season was just so massive because he was good, but he was also sort of inefficient, right? And this year, he's taking that leap from not just being good to great, but being one of the best players in the entire league. And we're seeing him do it on this national stage.
It's a famed saying, the third year leap. That's when super duper stars really go from, okay, we're pretty good in our first 2 years to, okay, now you have to reckon with us in games that actually matter. But for him to increase his scoring from 19 to 27.5 points per game, to up his efficiency, to see his usage just absolutely skyrocket, that's stuff that you don't see. And the pieces around him are basically the exact same. But the real improvement is in the paint, where he led all players in the whole league in points in the paint. He's acrobatic in midair. He stays in the air. His hang time is longer than basically everybody else's. So everybody hits the ground. He's still in the air and is able to finish over you. He's incredible.
Morant against Westbrook. Tries to take him off the bounce. He spins. He scoops. Follows his own in. Oh, what a play by Morant.
Even better to send, you know, all those yellow, gold, whatever color your jersey you want to call, home sat. So you can take that back to L.A.
He wins the Most Improved Player Award. Mike, I didn't have a vote for this. We did it for SI. I voted for Ja as the Most Improved Player, as did everybody else, because he deserved it. And yet, it doesn't really feel like that award does it justice, right? It almost feels insufficient.
When you're in MVP conversations and LeBron James called everyone who voted for him for Most Improved Player a dweeb, which is very kind of him. But yeah, it's like, I don't want to poo-poo Most Improved Player. It's an important award. But when you go from star to top 10 player, usually those players don't win Most Improved Player. He had the profile of a most valuable player. So when you have that and you win Most Improved Player, it seems like a step down. Give him all the awards. He's going to win all the awards before his career is over, that's for sure.
Give him all the awards. He deserved it. And yet, he didn't quite seem like he wanted it. Tell people what Ja did with his actual Most Improved Player award. And it kind of dovetails nicely with another guy you just wrote about.
Right. So Ja spent the whole season lobbying for Desmond Bane to win Most Improved Player, never talking about himself in any type of conversation like that. So when he actually wins the award, when Ja won the award, he took the trophy and drove it to Desmond Bane's house and left it in his kitchen on his counter for him. So the actual trophy is in Desmond Bane's possession right now, which is, I don't think that's ever happened before.
I think it's a very cool story. I wonder if he had a key, but still, what a mensch. He joined LeBron and Kobe as the only players to score 45 points or more in multiple playoff games before turning 23, which is so mind-blowing, right? His future is incredibly bright. Everybody is raving about him, including Chris Paul, who you spoke to. What did Chris Paul have to say? I mean, Chris Paul right now is himself having an unbelievable playoff run. What did he have to say about Ja?
Yeah, Ja Morant actually attended one of Chris Paul's camps.
Ja came to my camp when he was in college. And I remember seeing him when he came down to North Carolina. And he was explosive then, right? Like after hooping one day, all of them was just dunking. And so when you got that ability that he has, but then you got the dog too, right? You got the hunger. You got that grit. When you can hoop and play and still feel like you're in the backyard, but you're in the NBA, you know, the sky's always the limit.
He's just loose. You see him dancing on the court. He's playing like no one's watching. He's playing like he's in the backyard still. And when you can do that and you have the talent that Ja has, when you're not afraid of the moment, you're a scary force in professional basketball.
Are we looking at one day saying Ja Morant's the best player in the league?
I think that that is possible. Absolutely. I think that even more likely, which is just as impressive, is we will probably look at it. There will be a day in the near future where he is also the face of the NBA. He is the most popular player in the NBA. That has been LeBron James for well over a decade, and there's going to be a vacuum that needs to be filled pretty soon. And if I had to pick someone, I'd probably pick Ja as that guy to fill it, because he transcends the casual fan. You don't have to know anything about basketball to sit down, watch the Memphis Grizzlies, and be completely enthralled, completely entertained, transfixed by what this person is doing with his body on a basketball court. So when he gets to his prime, he might already have a championship by then. When he's 27, 28 years old, I don't know if there will be a more popular player in basketball, and there might not be a better one, to your point.
I can't wait to see what that looks like. It's already incredibly fun. And as you mentioned, transfixing. Read his excellent story on Ja on SI.com, which we will link to in our show notes. Listen to him on Open Floor. He's the writer equivalent of a Ja Morant poster dunk. Mike Pina, thanks for this.
Thank you, guys.
Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit SI.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Cooper McKim, Jessica Yarmosky, and Isaac Lee, who is also our sound engineer. Our senior producer is Dan Bloom. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. Thanks for listening. And if you stuck around this long, we leave you with this.
Do you want me to say soccer, by the way? Is that going to piss people off? Because it's American. No. Okay.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel.
Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.